Okay, I think you will agree no two businesses are alike, but there are similarities, and often those similarities come in the form of business challenges that can significantly impact your bottom line. So wouldn't it be great to learn how some of your industry colleagues have successfully overcome some challenges, especially those similar to the ones that's been keeping you up at night? For the next hour or so, in a session entitled Unconventional Problem Solving, representatives from three HMA member companies will be sharing some really interesting project information. Today we have Josh Green, who is plant manager, Middle Tennessee Lumber Company, and he will be discussing their new rough mill installation. Wayne Law, president, and David Bailey, vice president of operations, New River Hardwoods, will be discussing the why, how, success, and issues surrounding their decision to add a slabber head. And then we also have Brian Schilling, vice president of engineering, Pike Lumber Company Incorporated, will be discussing their automated lumber stacker, specifically what led up to their decision, the implementation of the new equipment, and results to date. Linda has asked me to serve as a panel moderator to keep the discussion within the allotted time frame, but this conversation will continue later this afternoon at one of the industry confab roundtable sessions. So if your question is not addressed this morning, have it ready for later today. Please join me in welcoming our HMA panel participants. We'll start off with the first question. What measurements influence your cabinet's powers to be to move forward with the project? Josh, can you start the conversation and tell us what measurements influence Middle Tennessee's management to move forward with this project?
I guess it's pretty simple, right? Like, we're here to make money. So, the first thing should be in like bold letters, how can we make some more money? But if you look at our process, the real boring stuff, the numbers, we wanted to reduce material handling. We wanted to increase our product flexibility. We wanted to, be able to respond to our customers quickly. We got customers, everybody does, that just want like ridiculous stuff yesterday. And we wanted to be able to give them that. We wanted to increase our production. In 2013, this is actually like an old project, so like I had to go back and like remind myself why we did what we did. So this was 2013, we were doing about 3,600 board feet per hour through our rough mill, and we're just coming out of the recession, so we wanted to be able to increase that, almost double it to 6,000 board feet per hour. We wanted to be able to improve our cost allocations in that department. That's really a lot of that's based on our man hours. So we were wanted to go from 274 board feet per hour, which was a pretty good number for us, to 340 board feet per hour, and that would have reduced our cost by $6 a board foot, or $6 per 1,000 board feet. And the way we were handling our lumber at the time, which will make more sense, I'm gonna go ahead and go to the next slide. This doesn't show up as well as it does at home, but this is, I call this a spaghetti diagram, just because it looks like a bowl of spaghetti, right? I mean, this is what our process looked like. We're like running across our yard, like all day, every day, like tailors running into each other, just trying to get material from one end to the other. And we just, wanted to reduce that. We wanted to make it more of a streamlined process. And by doing that, we'd be able to eliminate a department that was just, really more of a sorting department coming out of our kilns. That's basically the, right there is the map of our Taylor forklifts. Their travel path, crisscrossing. You can kind of tell between the kilns and the back to the sorting line, there's, I guess, I don't know if that's four or five, paths that crisscross there. So we were trying to just really simplify the whole process and reduce our amount of material handling and double handling of material. Going forward, you know, this was kind of our flow chart of our process. It's pretty straightforward. You know, we receive green lumber from a lot of you guys, from a lot of sawmills. We dip it, we stack it, we air dry it, we kiln dry it, and then that's where we get really inefficient. We go from the cooling shed, depending on what grade of lumber it was, it went to a different department. It had to be sorted. If it was FAS, it went, you know, it would go through one process. If it was, if it was a select board that was going to get ripped into a molder blanket, it went to a different process. Or if we were going to make flooring out of it, it went through a different process. And once it got designated for that destination, there was no turning back. So for us, you know, I don't know about y'all, but like it just really stinks to see a nice, what you paid one common price for, you see a nice wide board and you're like, that's an FAS board. I could get like, you know, a lot more money for that if I was shipping it overseas or selling it to somebody as an FAS board, but I'm just going to rip it into a 2-inch piece of flooring and like eat it on it. So basically, you know, that's what we're trying to get rid of. We were trying to get rid of, you know, maximize the value on every single board without having to go crazy with material handling. So that was the whole point of our rough mill project.
Okay. Wayne and David, I'm sure the two of you were involved in this decision to move forward with your project. What influenced your decision?
Okay, back in early 2017, we found an opportunity to buy an idled older sawmill in a good procurement area. And so we acquired this older facility. And we said, what are we going to do to make this to get to the production where we want it to be efficient, safe, and produce what we want? So it had traditionally been about 2,000 feet per hour. We wanted to take 4,500 feet per hour without starting up from scratch. So we identified low-risk equipment that we could put in to increase that production. We went to Clearman and got upgraded drive and carriage. We went to ABM and got edger. And then we made a decision. We went to some mills in West Virginia, one mill in West Virginia that had a slabber head. And that's traditionally not in the hardwood business, but talking to the mill manager at that West Virginia mill, you know, he said, well, gosh, we added 1,000 feet per hour just by putting a slabber head in. So we were retrofitting the mill anyway to put in the Clearman carriage, upgrade, put an edger in to bring it up to 4,500 feet. And I said, well, my gosh, if we could do that, that would be the easiest path we could take. We wouldn't have to add any people. If anything, it would make it safer and more efficient. It was a proven technology. We actually saw it working. And that probably was the biggest key we had in moving forward to this. And the second thing is, if you can get 1,000 feet per hour more by slabbing rather than by chipping the slab rather than cutting the slab, we anticipated well under a year payback, even less than 6 months payback. So from that point, it was a no-brainer. As David will get into it later, there was a lot of unknowns to us being new to it, but we minimized that, and this decision was, let's go forward, let's see if we can make it work.
Okay. Brian, what made Pike realize it was time to consider an automated lumber stacker?
Okay. Well, in 2016, we began the operations of the new automated sticking line. It was a capital project in addition to just the stacker. It was built in a new building. We expanded air dried yards. We improved our road system, and so it was more than just a piece of equipment with regards to this project. In 2011, we had considered, we made the decision to expand sawmill capacity of the company by 25%. At that time, we looked at our old Irvington Moore stacker and said, can it handle 25% more lumber? Because we were expanding sawmill capacity to grow. And we did some studies. Basically, we wanted to, first of all, check the can the mechanics of it handle it. And so in that study, we basically made the decision, throw as much necessary manpower at it to see what is the mechanical capacity on our product of this operation. And in 2012, we reached the conclusion that this old stacker line that was built in 1974 had well enough capacity to handle this added 25%. So we kind of tabled it. Some projects come along and it's like, you know, you got to do it. It's just foot on the accelerator, get it done and go. This was not one of those. It was, we think we might need it. Let's investigate it. We reached the conclusion that no, what we've got is fine. We were running it just one shift and had over our history at times ran it two shifts. So we had that cushion. We reached a conclusion to put it on a back burner. And if memory serves, I think we expanded with our dry kill facility in 2012 instead of a stacker. So a couple years later, we were considering an additional 20% increase in our mill production. And we revisited this subject and said, you know, can it handle that amount of capacity? And in this time around, we were a little bit broader in our thoughts, and we have three sawmills and we have 39 dry kill chambers. All of that lumber had to go through this one 40-year-old machine, and it was that probably that was our biggest decision maker in beginning the research on a new stacker. We felt that there was a significant risk to the interruption of the process if we were to have a major breakdown on this. Now, you know, in the first go around, our maintenance department said, whatever breaks on that, we can make it. If we can't get it, we can make it. And they could. But we felt that we were in jeopardy with that, all of our product having to go through that one facility and then back out, that caused us to ultimately reach the decision to proceed with this.
Next question, what were the keys for the successful implementation of the project? And we'll start with Josh.
You know, everybody here has put in new machinery, started a new process. So there's a lot of things that, you know, go through that whole process, you know, going over design reviews, going and seeing the equipment run. So when I think about this question, I just think about like our rough mill and projects we've done since then. You know, for us, it was really about our vision, about what we wanted to be as a company. And so, like, anytime a question came up about, you know, whether you're going to make this conveyor, you know, this much longer, or, you know, how you're going to, you know, just anything, like, just the nitty-gritty details, it always came back to that vision. What do we want to do? And for us, our vision was we want to have one-piece flow through our system. You know, you process a piece one time, and you're done with it. You know, it goes through that process once. It doesn't have to come back around. It doesn't have to, you know, you don't change your mind about what that piece of lumber is going to be. That was always our focus whenever we were designing our rough mill, when we were designing our layout, when we were looking at just our total plant operation. How can we minimize the number of times we touch a piece of wood? On top of that, it's just maximizing the value. You know, you probably hear this a lot. What is value added? Forklift traffic you know, is not value added. It's just, you know, you're just moving it from one place to another. Your customer doesn't want to pay for that. They want you to, you know, to do something to make, to take that tree, you know, to a finished product, like the little 90-second video we saw. That's what they want. They want their hardwood floors. They want their cabinet doors. You know, they don't want it to be moved from point A to point B. So that the whole time we were thinking about that, every time we had a question we had to answer with our supplier or just in-house, it was like, how are we going to maximize the value? How are we going to minimize the number of times we touch this piece of wood? Definition for us, that was like clear goals. Like, how are we going to know that this project was successful? How are we going to know that we've accomplished what we set out to accomplish? And that was just, you know, for us, it was real simple. We wanted to process one board every 2 seconds. I mean, there's like, you know, you're either doing that or you're not. And so we just had a really succinct, clear goal of what we wanted to do through our rough mill coming out of our dry kilns. And then we had a realistic time frame. I don't know if y'all know our owners, but the Joyces are, and myself actually, are very, everything takes 5 minutes. All right, but that's not real. All right, that's like our 5 minutes. Like, our 5 minutes today could be an hour, or it could be like next week, or, you know, it could be like we're waiting on the truck, which really means we just bought it, and you know, whatever excuse you want to hear, that's our 5 minutes. So we had to, like, you know, calibrate ourselves and be like, all right, this is. The rough mill, we didn't have a backup rough mill. We didn't have a backup rip saw. I mean, we auctioned the equipment off, you know, the day before we ripped it out. So we had to be really real with ourselves about how long are we going to be without a rip saw, you know, before we start ripping material again and start, you know, manufacturing flooring again. And that turned out to be 4 weeks. It was a pretty lengthy installation or demo and installation. So that was very key to our success because we spent the 3 months prior to that running two shifts, which we don't do. We're a one shift company. So we spent the 3 months prior to that running two shifts on our old line in order to build up our inventory, our flooring blank inventory, so that we could still run our flooring line when for a month that we weren't running our rough mill line. So that was very key. Collaboration. I was new to the wood industry right after we did this, so I didn't know who did what. Google was my best friend. YouTube was my best friend. I mean, I still can't really tell the difference between red oak and white oak half the time, unless it's like really red. And so I had to talk to people that knew what the crap was going on. And so I did that. I can go on forever about this project because I'm really passionate about it. But we had a Marine Johnson saw at the time. And we had a progressive saw. We had a two rip saw system. So only two rip saws that existed in my mind at that time were Marine Johnson and Progressive. And so that's the only people I knew who to request a quote from. So I went to IWF back in 2012, and my eyes were huge. And if you said you could rip a piece of lumber, I was talking to you about our rough mill. And so. Over the course of about a year and a half, I talked to anybody and everybody that had, I didn't know the difference between a bandsaw and, or a saw mill and what we were doing at a rough mill, you know, ripping stuff into width. I had no clue, which was in the end turned out to be a great thing because I went to OSI and I was like, hey, this is what we want to do. And they're like, don't talk to us. We don't do that. Talk to those guys. And we ended up settling on a LICO system, but it literally took 8 months of not knowing who built a rip saw, who built, you know, good material handling equipment to come to that conclusion. And then beyond that, you know, collaboration, you know, for us meant layouts. We had an existing building that we wanted to fit this all in. And, you know, it had limited space. It had, you know, columns. It wasn't just an open span building. And so we had to get very creative in how we were going to flow this material through the building and maximize our floor space. And I can't remember how many times I went to Office Depot and I was like, can you print this on a 24 by 36 piece of paper? And they were like, you were here yesterday. And I was like, yeah, but we moved the saw. Don't worry about it. Like, just print it. And I can't see it on my computer. I need it, like, right here. And then that kind of just goes with patience. You know, when you have a very clear goal, you know what you want to do, and you're just like, your focus is on that. Patience kind of comes easy, you know, because you're like, I'm not going to accept anything but what I want. So until you get what you want, you're kind of stuck there. You're like, I'm going to keep going. So the patience kind of came naturally, but I got really frustrated at different times. Like, you're not, you know, talking to suppliers, that you're just not understanding what I'm asking or what I want. And then lastly, hard work. You know, nothing worth doing comes easy. Everybody here knows that. But y'all probably would say the same thing about your employees, but we have some of the hardest working employees at our plant. And it just makes everything I do easy, because when you know, like, hey, buddy, I got a guy named Stormy. Hey, Stormy, I need you to be here for 14 hours today. Yes, sir, boss. You know, when you got guys that are willing to do that and you're willing to do that to achieve a goal, you know, anything is possible. So,
very good.
Sorry, I can go on forever. Go ahead.
Wayne David, same question.
Sure. Kind of going on with kind of Josh said, you know, when we took this project on, and Wayne talked about moving this mill from a 2,000 board foot an hour mill to about a 4,500 feet an hour mill, you know, a lot of thought went into this. And we knew the vendors that we wanted to work with. We knew where, you know, these guys were successful at what they were doing. I mean, you know, when we first started going into this, we said, you know, Clearman Industries was somebody we've worked with before. We have a good relationship with, and that they can always help us out. Paul Tall John put the controls in, and when we came to this with this idea with Clearman, they said, sure, you know, we can do it. We haven't done this before, but why not? You know, and they were more than willing to help with this and jump in there and do anything. ASM, Advanced Sawmill Machinery, built the actual machine, and Key Knife made the head for us. And they were influential in making sure that we made the right decisions. And they were open and honest, and that's what you need in a vendor. You know, if they can't do something, they need to tell us right away. And if they can, make sure they let us know the details of that. And they always worked with us when we kind of, you know, sometimes we'd ask stupid questions. And, you know, they would be patient with us and walk us through everything and make sure we understood what we needed to do. Another key factor with us was we had an experienced installer and also a very patient installer with us. We used an installer who installed some of these systems up in West Virginia and some other sawmills. And so he came in with knowledge of how to do this. And it was, you know, like Josh said, you know, I think we would change the design on this five times a day and say, we want to do this or we want to do that. And how about if we put this in there? And, you know, so it constantly changed. So we had a great installer, Amick Welding, installed, you know, the equipment for us. And they were very patient. You always got to have that kind of collaboration with those people to do that. And then the manufacturers were on site. We had Key Knife, we had ASM, we had guys from Clearman who came in and made sure everything was working right when we started up. Yeah, there was little hiccups here and there, but they were always there to work with us, and they got it fixed and to the way we wanted it. And another key one is employee buy-in. And you guys know this, anytime you put something new in, you've got an employee that's worked there for 20 years, they say, oh, this won't work. You know, we've either done this before or, you know, we're not going to, you know, this is just not going to work. You know, I've done this for 20 years. I know this is not going to work. Well, we didn't have that problem there. This is a brand new crew. And so the advantage was it was a brand new crew. They had no idea. They thought this is just the way it was supposed to be. The disadvantage was they were brand new and they had no idea what they were doing. So, you know, we had both sides of that. Some issues that we had, you know, when we put this in, you know, it's a 300 horsepower slabber, so it's a pretty robust machine. You know, and Clearman, you know, when we first did it, Clearman came to us and said, wait a minute, guys, you're going to have to put a pretty stout carriage in here to make sure this works. And, you know, that's the kind of feedback we needed to make sure we had when we put this in. So it's got to hold that log on that carriage, you know, pretty strong. And so when it hits that slabber head, and I'll show you some videos in a minute, when it hits that slabber head, you know, it's got to make sure it keeps it there so that the lumbers, the thickness is right, the cants are square, and all those issues. Another issue we had there was byproduct handling. The mill was built about a foot off the ground. So with the slabber head, you got waste products coming off of this head. You got chips flying out of that thing pretty fast. So we basically had to dig a pit about 7 feet deep underneath that carriage to catch those byproducts. And that was an interesting project because we hit water, we did this, we did that, and all these kind of things happened. But we had guys who worked through this. We figured out a way to make it happen. And I mean, the philosophy was we're going to make this happen. This is what we want, and we're going to make this happen. And we kind of came up with some unique engineering plans to make it happen. And it worked. So we had to put an auger in this pit and then haul up the chips and the dust out of there and pull it out of there. Some other issues were, you know, some retrofitting issues. When we put the slabber head, it kind of moved the log deck over a little bit. So when it did that, it kind of made the log turn a little off center. These are the kind of issues that we didn't anticipate, and we had to kind of work around to make sure they worked right. So whenever you put something in and you do a retrofit on a system, you kind of have to realize that you know, you're gonna alter the flow in other places. Wayne didn't mention that we're putting in another sawmill right now too in Roan Mountain, Tennessee, and that one's a brand new mill. So we took a lot of this and we said, okay, this mill's going to go up 8 feet in the air. We're going to have this and that and this, and so it's a completely different process than what we dealt with before with this mill up in Cumberland Gap, Virginia. So retrofitting and building a new mill, you're dealing with basically two different philosophies, you know, when you're putting it in there. I think I'll go into the videos where we can kind of show you. Well, I'll show you two videos, and one will be one angle and one will be the other, and it'll just show you kind of what it's doing right now. So this is one angle of the slabber head right there. This is Papa going through there. We told him to take a fairly big slab off that so it would open that face up fairly wide. You can see the chips flying, so that's always an issue right there. But what it's doing is, you know, we're pulling that slab, so we're not having to pull that extra line. So by not being able to pull that extra line, we can get those logs through there a lot quicker. So it dropped it right there, and it's out. One of the other issues with that one was we had no drop belt. So say if the slabber head went down for whatever reason, there's no drop belt there. We fixed that when we put in the Roan Mountain where we do have a drop belt. So say if we had to take the slabber head down for whatever reason, say if we didn't want to run it and for a couple hours, we could keep running at Roan Mountain. Here, we can, but it's a little bit more challenging, you know, technically challenging, I guess. The next video will show it from the opposite side. So this is coming from the opposite side. So you'll see it going through there. You see the slabber head right there, the head. That head, we typically can go in about 5 or 6 inches off that head. You can go deeper, but typically, you know, about as deep as we'll go is about 5 or 6 inches into that head. that's a video from the opposite side. So, like we said, you know, the important things that, I guess to sum everything up, the important things for us were making sure we have buy-in all the way around, from employees to vendors to installers and everybody. It was, that was made the, our project successful to us, was making sure we had all that buy-in from everybody.
Okay. Brian, same question.
Okay. The beginning of our process, once we had reached a decision of that we were going to embark upon this project, was to do some research. And we solicited input from trusted vendors who don't necessarily sell stackers, but they're out in mills installing other equipment, dry kill manufacturers that use the product coming off of stackers and their familiarity with that and where the quality machines were. We kind of quickly narrowed it down for auto stick placing stackers. Two vendors were MoCo and TS Manufacturing. We made several trips. There was a project team. We're a small company with, at the time we had 5 board of directors, and 4 of those 5 had experience at the executive level in the day-to-day operations of the company. So they were well engaged in production and timber and all the things we do. So it wasn't difficult to get their interest in the project. We just had to do our research. In fact, one of the biggest benefits of this organization is our open doors to each other. We visited four members that had auto stick placing stackers: Georgia, Ohio, West Virginia, North Carolina. We made trips. We took one or two of those directors along with 3 or 4, you know, whatever we could do. And as you mentioned, buy-in, that helped cement the buy-in of those guys, because they were out seeing what this equipment could do. Another resource in that research phase, I'm not sure if everybody's aware of it, but HMA website has an equipment section. And if you participate in providing the information of the equipment you have, then you have access to this link on our website, and you can go in and see if you're in the market for a new filing machine. You can go in and see what members have a certain piece of equipment, and I know we're always open to answering questions about the operation of our equipment, and we found that others have been too. So that's another good resource when we're researching a new piece of equipment that we don't have any familiarity with. With this capital investment, we had several things that we felt were very important, and the start of that is, the purpose of it was we were increasing capacity through our plants, so we needed more production. But I guess equally, if not more important, was we had to maintain the quality of the product and the quality of the process that product went through. For example, we have a standard whereby we box pile things. We have 4 lumber sorts, typically 6 through 8, and then 9s and 10s, and then 11s and 12s, and then 13 through 16. We insist upon the liner boards of each layer being full length, and we box pile. So every other board, if it's not full length, gets pushed to the opposite end. So that's in our opinion, we feel that's an important quality that we didn't want to give up. We had experienced on our old stacker putting fences in, and to some degree we had them automated by lowering them down with a pulley system and crawling out on the chains and dropping the 8-foot fence in and kind of things. And so for safety, we wanted to be sure that we addressed those issues. We had one of the guys mentioned the guy who's worked there for 30 years, and not that, you know, he had shoulder injuries from box, from pushing boards, and so we wanted to automate that. So we wanted to solve that issue. Then I guess getting back to production capacity, our goal was 10,000 feet an hour on our product. We visited mills that we saw MOCO stackers running upwards of 15 to 20,000 feet an hour. So we felt that the machinery wise, we had that it would provide the capacity we needed. I mentioned several employee work environment things that there just a minute ago. In addition, we place when the package is done at our old stacker, it would roll out, and then either the guy putting the tag on or the forklift driver would get out and put 2x4s on top off of a package that was on the ground or standing up or something, and we wanted to make that easier. So in the new system, we have what I refer to as a dunnage placer. It's kind of an unscrambler. It brings the 2x4s up to a chain right next to the package, so there's really not much lifting involved. It's just sliding it from a chain here over to the top of the finished package. And so when the forklift driver, when the package goes out of the building, the 2x4s are already on it. Forklift driver doesn't have to get out. It just pulls up, picks it up, takes it out, sits down. So that was improvement. Safety-wise, I guess getting a little bit ahead, that some things we learned is important to train on new equipment. New equipment is where the old stacker, you had to push a foot pedal to get the chains to go and the fork hooks to drop and so forth. All that is automated. So training the employees that, you know, this isn't like the old stacker. It's things are going to move. You might reach in and move a board and unblock a foot away, and it makes a whole series of events happen that you're not expecting. So important to train that way. A few months after startup, we had a finger injury, and it was probably our fault in not communicating with the vendor what activity we were going to do at that certain area, and it was a combination of a little bit a lack of training on the employee's part. We provide leather gloves that when you first put them on, even I have big hands, they after you use them a while, they kind of fit to your fingers, but there's loose tips, and this guy had small hands, and the tip of his finger didn't get in, but the tip of his glove did, and caused severe finger injury. So training, another area we had, and this was part of the machinery provider sharing with their other installations. There are certain mills that they had that from time to time a stick will get misplaced underneath a layer, or a board won't land just right, and the operator will, you know, push the safety stops and go out on the package, but the top layer of that package is 12 feet off the floor, and so we strung a fall protection cable across. The guy has to wear a harness, and it's a pain, but he has to hook onto that cable before he goes out, and you know, 99.9% of the time it's unnecessary, but it's that 0.1%. Another thing on that list that we wanted to address was employee work environment. If you remember some of the first pictures on our old stacker, in 1974 it was built as a lean-to onto one of our warehouses. Had no windows. In the summertime, it had sliding doors on the side, you could open it up. But the wintertime, you'd go in there at 6:30 in the morning, and it was dark as could be. It was heated, but it was just a very, very dark area. So we wanted to correct that situation. We put some windows in this building so that employees at their workstations could, you know, they can't see the whole yard, but they can get out and see that there is life out there. And the top 3 feet of the building, we designed with daylight panels. You sacrifice heat efficiency with that. because you can't insulate that area. So you do have heat loss, but you get that daylight brightness in the building, and so it improves the employee work environment. The automatic stick placer was key to this project, and so getting the bugs worked out of it feeding properly was a little bit time consuming. I think that's all I had.
Okay.
For this part.
Next question: production increases and efficiencies that have been realized versus the original projections. Josh?
Well, my boss, I don't see my boss out there, so we just hit all our goals. I mean, everything went as planned. It was kind of funny. I have to always remind myself. It was kind of a fun exercise getting ready for this, because this is a 4-year-old project for us. So, I've been patting myself on the back a long time for this project. But when you go back and look at it, it didn't go as smoothly as I remember it, which is probably how most projects go, if we're really being honest with ourselves. In 2013, the year prior to us installing this machine or this production line, our rough mill, we did 3,600 board feet per hour. That was our average production. I said earlier, our goal was to process a board every 2 seconds, and for us, that should equate to about 6,000 board feet per hour, at a minimum. In 2014, we actually only experienced 5,400 board feet per hour. So we actually came in underneath our goal there, which I don't remember that looking back on it. I just remember it being a success. And I attribute a lot of that to just, I don't mention this earlier, but basically what happened is we, had a rough mill line, and we auctioned it off the week before Thanksgiving. So the Saturday before Thanksgiving, an auction company came and did it. We ran the line on a Saturday. People could watch it run on the internet. There was an online auction, or if they were actually on site, they could watch the line run. And like at noon, we turned the machine off and somebody bought it for like 80 grand. They got a steal. And we just started ripping it out. And so basically right after the new year, that was when we were gonna start running this new line. And it was talking about, a new machine, a new process, same operators. Like, it was unlike anything they had seen, unlike anything they had done before. I mean, they were used to having to work hard to get a board to go through our rip saw. And this now, like, the person that's working hard is the guy pulling it off the line, because it's coming at him every 2 seconds. But there was definitely a learning curve there, that although the machine was capable of running that board every 2 seconds, our operators weren't ready to run a board every 2 seconds. So that's what I attribute the not meeting the 6,000 board feet per hour to. With that being said, since we adjusted our manning because we weren't running 6,000 board feet an hour, we still were able to hit going blank on the word I'm looking for here, but exceed our goal when it comes to board feet per man hour. So we had said, okay, this line's going to take 15 people to run. Well, since we hit 6,000 board feet an hour on just a production scale, we were able to go to 13 people an hour. So we still hit our board, we achieved our board footage per labor hour goal even though we weren't able to achieve our board footage per just working hour. One thing when we looked at that spaghetti diagram earlier, we had a department, it actually got tied in the way we did things. It got tied into our stacking operation, but we called it, it was the dry line. And so we ran that dry line, it was kind of like a half of a department. It was some guys that worked back there when we processed our high grade material. They sorted through it. And our expectation was we were going to be able to eliminate that department. Well, we didn't eliminate that department. And that was like $175,000 of our payback that we did not achieve. So again, I don't like to remind myself of this part of it, but my boss sitting here so I can talk about it. But we just repurposed those guys, right? We're not out there trying to cut heads, we're not trying to, we took those guys and instead of now grading dry lumber, we started grading a lot of y'all's lumber. We started grading the green lumber coming in because we weren't satisfied with them. We were at the time prior to this project, we were grading somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 10% of our income in green lumber. After this, we really liked the guys that were back there. We didn't want to fire them. We didn't want to get rid of them. And so all we did is just started grading more green lumber coming in. So now we're about 35% of our green lumber gets graded. And it opened up a lot of avenues, too, for smaller mills that don't have graders, that we were able to buy their lumber ungraded, and they just now we pay them on our grading tally, which is very convenient and just opened up a lot of new doors for us.
Josh, over the most recent years, did you see that number get closer to the 6,000?
Actually, this is where my boss is supposed to walk in because I'm going to show the graph because we actually did event. No, he didn't just walk in. That's been too convenient. Yeah. So our rough mill production, like I said, we did have a 30% increase in the first year, but we didn't hit that 6,000 feet per hour goal. It's kind of a weird graph. I'm a graph guy, but so you got two axes on this. The blue line is your board footage per man hour, and the red line is board footage just per hour, regardless of how many employees you have. So you can see in 2014, we hit around 5,400. But then in 2015, we went well beyond the 6,000. We got like around 6,100. To now, we're averaging close to 6,600 board feet per man hour. That's all learning curve. These guys, between us and Lyco, who is the company that sold us the rip saw, we feel like we know the machine. Those operators, man, they're ridiculous. They like why you wouldn't listen to them is ridiculous. They know, they're like, that sensor's not working. I'm like, no, I put my hand over it, it turns green, it works. They're like, it ain't working, dude. the saw is slow. Like, it should go faster. You gotta listen to these guys. Those guys are what's doing the work. They're making it happen. And once they learn the system, 6,000 feet an hour was, that was an afterthought for them. They already had their goal set, way higher than I ever did. So yes, we did. Okay. We hit that goal. Board footage per man hour, 60% increase over in both of these metrics for us. It's basically a 30% increase over the first year, but over the past 4 years, it's been a 60% increase. So it's a great result. Sorry, I'm getting cottonmouth here. Thing that we didn't anticipate that we're going to talk about here, I talked about the bad. We didn't hit 6,000 board feet an hour right out of the gate, and we didn't eliminate that department.
Thank you so much.
We didn't didn't eliminate that department that, you know, we thought we might eliminate or we anticipated eliminating. But we did such a better job surfacing our material. Prior to this, we just basically did like a 15-16, you know, like hit or miss surfacing before it went to our flooring line. With in this project, we incorporated an OSI planer, and we're going to a 13-16 flooring blank on our surface material. And our side matcher or our molder, just like it doesn't ever bog down, it doesn't ever, you know, hiccup. And so our flooring production actually experienced a 7% increase without us doing anything, you know. So that was, you know, that makes up for my mistake on that $175,000 department. Because we experienced it way, you know, this was a much better benefit than, you know, getting rid of, you know, 8 employees. So that was a unexpected result that we saw that, you know, actually benefited us. I think that is it for me. Might be pointing to that.
Yeah. All right.
Wayne
this
David?
This is the, I guess this is where the rubber meets the road. This is what everybody wants to know about a project, you know, how it does. And unlike Josh here, I got my ball sitting right next to me. So I really can't.
So you can't lie.
I can't lie. So anyway, once we got done with this project, you know, we saw basically we gained from just the slabber head about 1,000 feet per hour. Like Wayne said, when we bought this mill, we bought it in mid last year. We started operating about October. We've gone from, you know, it was a 2,000 foot an hour operation. Now it's a, we're doing 4,500 feet an hour. On Poplar, we're getting over 5,000 feet an hour. The biggest reason is because of the slabber head. By reducing that, having to take that extra line, that has helped out a lot. So, you know, we saw a 28% increase in production just for that. Our milling rate went down $40 a thousand. So if you look at that at a shift, I mean, you know, we're anywhere between $1,500 to $2,000 a day. That's a significant amount of savings right there in production. We have a payback that we're anticipating in 7 to 8 months on that. So it was to us, it was a no-brainer project. I mean, it did what we wanted it to do. And like I said, it goes back to a lot of the collaboration with vendors, installers, and everybody having buy-in to that. We have little to no downtime on it. You know, we take it down at lunchtime and at the end of the shift to change knives. We change it's the 5-knife head, so we change those knives during lunch. It takes about 10 minutes. And at the end of the day, there is a saw on there that's around the head that just cleans up the board, so you make sure there's no knife marks in the board in that. So we change that about every other day. It takes a load off the chipper. It's one thing we saw. You know, the chipper is, it hardly gets anything. It gets blocks off the trim saw, and that's basically it, and some edger strips. It hardly gets any kind of, work on that. So we change the knives. You know, it used to be where you would change the knives on the chipper maybe twice a day. We change it 2 or 3 times a week. The one thing that we did notice, you know, then what happens is when you have these kind of results, it moves your bottleneck. So now our bottleneck is our resaw. It's a West Plains resaw. It's a horizontal resaw. So, you know, we've already brought in West Plains to start working on upgrading that. We want to move that to where that's not the bottleneck anymore. So that's our next project. So basically what happened was this project changed, you know, found our next project. And we anticipate that when we get this upgraded and we get that running to where we think it should be, it's going to move us to our next project, which will probably be putting optimization on the head saw. So, you know, it's kind of a snowball effect. One thing leads to another and leads to another, and you know, we feel like that's how we want our projects to roll. I mean, it leads to the next thing, to the next thing, and the next thing. It never stops. And that's how we anticipate just going with that all the way down the road. So that's all we have on that one.
Okay, Brian?
Okay. Well, as I mentioned before, our goal going into the project is we had 10,000 board feet an hour, and likewise, we haven't quite reached that when I was putting this together. The nice thing about having that board of directors that have been involved is that they understand that and there's patience. The thing that's not so nice is that 2 years later they don't forget it, that you haven't reached it. So we had, in the interim, we had moved on to another project, we've recently now come back to this and said, hey, you know, we're not quite there. And in fact, we added one more person, and we have had the last month or so, pretty consistently, we've exceeded 10,000 feet an hour, and in fact, we're gaining on footage per man hour as well. So the balance of having the right number of people and the material flowing in this building, it was early on, it was their lack of reaching that goal was mostly related to the forklifts, because it was a new level of production and we couldn't get material to and in out of the building quite quick enough. So but our going in 2014 and 15, when we were making these decisions, we hadn't quite experienced the shortfall of labor that we're in right now. But what we had experienced is the drastic increase in costs of not necessarily hourly wages, but the benefits. And our statistics are telling us that 45% of the production cost on this line is the cost related to that labor. It's the hourly rate, it's health insurance, it's workman's comp, it's payroll taxes, and actually it's a little bit more than that, because in our costing method, we'll allocate a certain percent of a maintenance department's costs to each production line. And when you allocate those, 40% of those maintenance costs are labor in that department that are now labor. They don't show up as labor on this sheet. And likewise, you know, when we've got a allocation for administration, and that's done by headcount, but the people who work in administration, 40% of that is labor, maybe more in that case. So we were trying to address the auxiliary, the other costs other than the direct labor that's associated with labor when we started this project. You mentioned, you know, you like the guy down on the end, that you don't want to make your more efficient just so you can go out and find somebody to fire. But in the situation, at least, that we're in now, those guys retire and they move on, and it's really hard to find the next guy to come in the door. So you can't, you have to improve, at least from our perspective, you have to improve your efficiencies and do more with less labor hours, and all of that comes to pass not necessarily by escorting 10% of your people out the door that day. It's just you don't have to find that many more when those retirements come along. At least in today's labor market in our area, is really difficult to find. So like I said, from this slide you can see we went from what we were saying was $18.52 a thousand was the labor part of our cost, and now we've dropped down to $11.19, and are more recently reaching that 10,000 feet an hour and nearing 2,500 feet per man hour. We're gonna have even more payback on this. It's not the traditional, I guess, I'm not an accountant, but return on investment involves how much more revenue you're going to get. And in this case, it's not, people aren't going to pay us anymore for sticking our lumber, but it's, so you got to look at it from reduced costs, the reduced costs on the payback. I think that's it for right now.
Okay. Next question. Looking back, what would you recommend someone do differently to make the job easier or realize a greater return? Josh?
Look, this is something we like to do a lot, actually, even almost on a daily basis, is look back at what we did the day before, look back at a project, and like, okay, you know, we got a couple military guys in our place, and so they call them AARs, after action reviews, and it's so handy because, again, hindsight, you kind of forget the bad stuff, you remember the good stuff, and you think everything was like daisies, but it really wasn't. And so if you can incorporate those, the lessons learned from the mistakes, or even the lessons learned from the good stuff, and just make sure you incorporate that again, it really works out. Couple things, like a theme I've noticed here, and we didn't really talk about this as a group before coming in here, but the employee buy-in, there's so many different ways to get employee buy-in. Like a lot of times that means like, you know, people talk about, you know, you read books on management and stuff. From the day one, you got to go get the employee and get their opinion about how the line runs. You know, that works too. But for us, employee buy-in was just like, hey, we're going to be ripping this line out, and your line that you've been working on for the past however many years isn't going to be here for the next month. Would you like to be here and sweep the floor as we, you know, rip this machine out, as I take a nut off a bolt and just throw it because I'm not worried about, you know, keeping up with it at that point? Will you pick that up? I mean, these guys, will you help us, you know, when the rigger is bringing the piece of equipment in, just, you know, make sure we don't hit something. Pull wire when you're running electricity. Like, it doesn't take a lot for somebody to get a sense of accomplishment when you're putting new equipment in. That's one thing that I've learned looking back on it, and we've incorporated into all our projects. But at the same time, I'm like, well, my wife really watches HGTV way too much. And so... she thinks she can do everything, which means really she just knows she can tell me to do everything. And so, but you got to know what you're good at, right? Like, I mean, know what you're good at, know what you need to take on versus what you shouldn't take on. And like for my guys, like as well as being the operations engineer, you know, on a day-to-day basis, I run our maintenance department. Well, my guys can install a 400 amp circuit breaker, you know, and they can
good
run.
Morning.
Good morning. I was wondering when that was going to happen.
It is the appointed hour, so we're going to go ahead and get started with our program. I'm Brian Tusick. I'm Chief Administrative Officer at the Global Service Center of the Risk Authority Stanford.
And hats right. off to you guys, I'll tell you.
What, those
I was listening to that, I thought, we have got feed coming from this next room.
Oh, yeah.
Required by the Risk Authority Stanford.
I'm excited about this presentation. This is what y'all really came for, right?
Surprise.
Service.
We can talk over
them. Okay.
There we go.
There you go. All right.
Okay, sorry.
I forgot
about
where
that.
I was even at. I was getting excited about whatever that was.
Just think of those guys over there listening about lumber.
Yeah.
For the last hour.
Yeah, ours is much better than whatever that was. Junk was. No, but like my guys can run, you know, 3-inch, 4-inch conduit, but that's not what we're good at. And that's not really what's going to make us successful tomorrow, you know? And so, like, for us, project responsibilities is, like, really being smart about what we're going to do and what we're efficient at and what's going to give our employees satisfaction versus what we can pay a contractor to do and get, you know. We just put in, separate of this, it's funny, whenever I buy a piece of equipment, they're like, the shipping company or the machine company will call you and be like, hey, this thing is, you know, it's 12,000 pounds. I'm like, dude, excuse my language, we crap 12,000 pounds around here. Like, we got a Taylor forklift that'll pick up 30,000 pounds, like, without thinking about it, you know? Just because a Taylor can pick up 30,000 pounds doesn't mean it's the device that you need to pick up that 12,000 pounds. Like, hiring a rigger is a good decision for us. Like, we're like, my guys can move 8-foot packs of lumber around all day long. When I want them to handle a delicate piece of machinery, that's not what they need to be doing. So, like, just being smart about it, about what we do, yes, we can do it all if we want to. Like, I mean, I got a good crew. We got a good 120 employees. We can make it happen, for sure. But that doesn't mean that's what we need to do. I was never more proud than when we went on this rough mill system. You know, we got quoted, and we, like, cut out, like, these, like, small chain decks, right? Like, in a $3 million project, we were like, nope, we're not paying for that $50,000, you know? And so we had to build these things, some of these things ourselves, or repurpose some old equipment that we had. And I remember one of my guys, he like spent 30 minutes walking around this chain deck that he had just built, taking pictures, taking a video, watching it run. And I was like, what are you doing, John? He's like, I'm sending this to my wife. I'm putting this on Facebook. You know, he was so proud of what he had just done. I guarantee you that chain deck will never stop running, because the first sign of it messing up, he owns that. Like, that's his chain deck. Like, for like it, I could have paid three times as much to Lyco, and they make good equipment. But if it stops running, they're not flying down from Quebec, Canada, you know, to make this guy. If that thing, like, even thinks about stopping running, he's there, because that's his. He owns it. He built it. And so when you can assign jobs to guys, our guys that run the production line, you know, they tighten the anchor bolts. They made sure it was level. Like, they have so much ownership in that. They weren't involved in the quotation process. They weren't designed in the initial layout. But they were involved in putting it together, you know, assembling it, and seeing the whole process come together. So they own it in a way that, you know, the guys that gets hired, you know, from the man, hiring people sucks, dude. I mean, that, like, yeah, getting rid of people, that, you know, that sucks. But hiring, there are a bunch of lazy people out there these days. I'm sorry, I'm on a tangent. Byproduct material handling. I know y'all talked about it with the chipper and the slabber head. I am like an engineer by degree, and so I think everything works perfectly. We're gonna work just like I drew it on paper. The math is always gonna be exact. You know, 2 + 2 is always 4, so don't question me. You know, but we have an awesome plant manager that has been around the industry for 60, or excuse me, he's 60 years old, so he's been around the industry for 40 years. And he always talks, every time we do a piece of equipment, he's like, what are you gonna do about, you know, the rework? I'm like, there's not gonna be any rework, Larry. That's his name, Larry. There's not gonna be any rework. And he's like, there's always rework. You know, like, something, it may only be 2%, you know, 5%. There's always rework. Making sure it doesn't have to be automated. It doesn't have to be, like, complicated. But you better think about how you're going to handle, you know, your rework, how you're going to handle, you know, your waste, your end trims, your edgings, how you're going to handle that, making sure that you properly assessed. One of the big things, I didn't put it in the unexpected results because it makes me look bad, but our grinder was not big enough to handle our edgings off of our rough mill when we first put it in. And so when we would run anything longer than 8 foot, it would bog down and it would back the whole system up. And it would actually trip the grinder out, which it was interlocked with the rip saw. So if the grinder's not running, the rip saw wouldn't run. And so it would stop up and we'd have to wait 10, 15 minutes while it cleared itself out. So we had to come back, you know, 6 months later, and a grinder that we had paid for, you know, $200,000 for, had to take it out and put one in twice as big. Just all because we didn't really think about how much more, you know, you're running better means you're going to have more waste. So always, and that's something I don't forget now. Like, you know, every time we talk about any project, I'm like, well, how, and it's kind of backwards to think about, but like, when this machine doesn't do its job right, what's going to happen? And what, how are we going to rework that? And the waste that comes off this machine, how are we going to rework that? It's a huge part of our job. Another aspect of that, I came from the automotive industry and metal stamping before I came to woodworking. So when somebody tells you something is, you know, in that industry, you know, if it's 11 gauge steel, it's 1/8 of an inch. It is 0.125 plus or minus maybe a 5/1000ths. All right. We're talking about quarters of an inch in lumber. Like, it's 4/4. That means it could be maybe an inch, maybe an inch and 3/8. Like that difference of mentality is pretty huge. So being able to, you know, just think about all those variables is pretty big.
Real quick, we got about 8 minutes.
I'm sorry, I'm going to take all 8 minutes, so y'all are screwed. Better examination of impact on the whole plant process. Exactly. I don't know who hit it, but like, you don't, and we talked about it in our flooring line, like being able to figure out, and it's not an exact science, but knowing how this, we did examine the impact on our whole plant, and we didn't do a very good job. Like, we knew we needed more lumber, so we built a new kiln. We added a new kiln. Thanks, Bruner. We built a new kiln prior to this and had to come back the next year and build three more kilns because we thought where our production was going to go up, you know, a little bit. It went up a lot. Our flooring line went up a lot. Like, some of our guys, they make their good money on overtime. Well, their overtime got cut because they were processing things faster. We had to find other jobs for them to do, you know. Calibrate the expectations of future projects. This is a big one, and I wish my boss was here at this point, because this project, even though we didn't meet all our goals, was such a home run that he expects every project to be that home run, that just is a slam dunk, you know, the 1 year payback. And so we've had to calibrate our expectations. Like, we're disappointed now when something takes 2 years to pay itself off, or you know, you only get a 2% improvement on something. Like, not everything is a home run. Sometimes you're just chipping away, but you know, a 1% gain today and a 1% gain tomorrow and a 1% gain the next week, you know, eventually you get that 10, 20, 50% improvement. So, you know, every project has to stand on its own. It has to pay for itself. But not everything. This project was a home run for us. That's why we always want to talk about it. But not every project is that huge of a home run. But as long as you're continuously getting better, continuous improvement, you're doing the right thing. You're not falling behind. So.
Okay, Wayne and David.
Talk fast.
30 seconds.
we still fully support our decision, and we have implemented with our new Room Mountain Mill. We've basically have a slabber head in it, and we've learned from our problems that we encountered at Cumberland Gap. We redesigned the byproduct handling. We elevated the mill. We have a drop belt in case the slabber head is not working, so we can actually cut the slab off and still drop it down to the chipper easier than what we can at Cumberland Gap. We thought more about understanding the potential, the impact up and downstream. You know, we buried the resaw, so now we're increasing the speed of that. So and then once we get the resaw fixed, it's going to throw some bottleneck over to the trim saw or the edger. But the resaw, we're in the middle of fixing that. So it's a big impact of production. It causes production flows elsewhere. We had to offset the debark. We had to change the log deck. That was something we didn't foresee, just the alignment of everything. And probably the bigger issue is the last one, the handling of deformed sweep or flare butts. We've had to put more emphasis out in the log guard to not accept those sweep logs, or to cut the flare butts off out in the yard or at the debarker before it gets to the slabber head. Otherwise, you're going to have to cut that off you know, we whittle away with this chipper head, which is not the way to do it. It's cut it off with a saw or out in the log yard. So we think this is a, like Josh said, a home run. Very happy with it, and we're putting in our next meal.
Okay, Brian?
Okay, one quick on the last question, returns. One thing we didn't count on, at the old stacker we had stick guides, and we were buying like 97 half inch long sticks. At the automatic, you don't need a guide to put it in because it can only go in one place. So we gained an inch and a half of package width. We, instead of making 96 inch packages, now we're making 97 and a half. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but 16 million feet through a dry kill over a year, that's a quarter of a million feet. That's more efficient with forklifts moving stuff around and loading packages and in the same space. So a couple of things that might suggest on future projects. One thing in that interim project that we did after this one, get a set of a camera system. We installed four cameras on our next project, and they're not the Ethernet because they're delayed vision, but they're like coax cable in type and a video recorder, and set those up when you're starting up and doing troubleshooting. I can be watching something and expecting something, and then if a piece moves or something, I can report what happened, and it's actually not what happened because it's what I was expecting. You can stop this camera, it's recorded, you back it up, slow-mo video. Very well worth the investment. Also, in our project, we do a lot of our installation, if we're not in the scenario where you got to tear a line out and back in, times of the essence. In this case, we build a new building, so our old stacker was running all the time we were working on this. So Pike Lumber employees built most of this equipment. Not the equipment, but installed most of the equipment. And one of the things that we failed on predicting was we installed this equipment in 8 days, and we spent the next 3 weeks building catwalk, stairs, railing, all the stuff around it. And I swear on the next project I'm not going to underestimate that, and I always do. So we had a difficult time finding 8-foot stackers. We make 8-foot packages, so we're going, and we'd hear people say, you know, well, it takes a really good stick, and you know, we got really good sticks. What are you talking about? You know, but the way the stacker works is it's got a 2.5-inch wide tray on the side of each arm where the stick lays, and we're using 1.25-inch wide sticks. Well, the deflection on a 4-foot stick at a stacker we were seeing, or on a 6-foot stacker, it looked like nothing, but on our 8-foot sticks, 1.25-inch deflection isn't very much. And so one of the downfalls of our project, we ended up having to replace about 25% of our stick inventory. So when we budget, we include, after we've got all the quotes in, we include a 10% contingency, and then we try and account for 5% administration, because it's those of us who've done the research, we spend it. We just got to bill it to the project. And it's tempting if you get into high numbers to try and shave those, but I encourage you to keep those. And if you end the project and don't spend it, then you're the hero. And one thing that we began doing on the project before this stacker was trying to put a lot of effort into tracking the costs. If we got a bill of hydraulic hose ends and stuff that are for the new project, don't just bill it to maintenance and expense it, but keep track of it, and it helps you predict on your next budget in what areas on the last project, what areas you underestimated, what you overestimated. And we do our best to try and track man hours as well, but that's probably something we could do a little better job on.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to wrap this session up to stay on schedule today, but remember, these gentlemen will be available this afternoon during the industry confab to answer any questions that you might still have. like to give them a round of applause for their work today. Thank you very much.